Welcome to the Pop Culture Show with Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby.
The not-so-world-famous Pop Culture Show is back. Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby. Hey, I saw Jimmy, by the way.
Jimmy Barron?
Walking the streets. Yeah.
And he wants his job back.
No. He didn't say anything. He was coming, I guess on Saturdays he doesn't drive. And so I saw him walking in the neighborhood from synagogue, I'm assuming. And I rolled my window down and he was with some other people. He said, oh, typical Jimmy. It's Barnes from Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby.
And he's listening. Just laughed. He's listening to our podcast.
Funny. What's up, Jimmy?
Please rate, review, and subscribe. Today on the show, Butch Walker will be on, one of my absolute faves.
Now, I totally know who he is, by the way, but you guys...
Unbelievable.
I would think you know who he is.
I know, I totally know, but you guys have like talked to him many times, right?
Yeah.
He's like family almost.
Right.
Cannot wait to talk to him about the epic show I saw him perform in last year.
That dude, he puts out albums almost as much as we put out a podcast episode.
Got to see the fan base. His fan base is rabid.
There we go. We promise. I love Butch. That's Marvelous 3, Cubby. I don't know if you ever played that in your stuff.
Early 2000s, I believe.
You did?
Right? Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Good.
Yeah, late 90s, early 2000s. And then, of course, I know all about, I was reading up about like Fall Out Boy and producing and Green Day and yeah.
Like everybody you can imagine, he has produced. Perform with Taylor Swift at the Grammys. When was that? Recently. In the last couple of years. I don't know how far back was that.
It's like he's...
Was it? They all run together in my head.
Yeah, he's one of those producers, though, that seamlessly can go from genre to genre. It's unbelievable.
So Butch is coming up. Pick us up on the iHeartRadio app now. We're on Pandora. Where else, Cubby?
Teslas.
Teslas. Yes. Yep, we're on Teslas and Amazon Alexa and, of course, in Turks and Caicos. How was your week, guys?
Good. I mean, I'm trying to think of a highlight. It's up here in New York. It's just been very hot. We're watching this tropical storm / hurricane possibly come up the coast this week. And then hanging with the baby, man. The baby turned 6 months old.
Cubby, I mean, your Instagram story, your Facebook story about your little shot machine is hysterical.
Earlier and earlier you're starting.
Well, I do a shot, as I told you guys last week, at 5 o'clock every day, and sometimes it leads into more after that. But yeah, you know, Friday, it was like, you know what? It was a long week. Let's just kick things off early. 4:05, boom.
Ugh.
Let's do a shot.
I called into a spot check on Thursday at 5:15. He was already on a second shot. I mean, it's just hysterical. What
well,
does
do
your
you guys
doctor
have
think?
Happy hour at home? I mean, do you maybe have a glass of wine, Leslie, or Barnes? A
Not
beer?
Every day.
Yeah, I'm a vodka guy. I'm not a beer guy. But yeah, my wife will usually kick off happy hour 5-ish, but we don't have an official machine.
He's right. Got the machine in his kitchen.
It will complete your kitchen. It will complete your kitchen, man.
It's usually dinner time.
Yeah. And by the way, we're talking Jägermeister, which is so gross. Sorry.
Well, I have a love-hate with it.
I saw they responded to the tweet they were tagged in with your... They must have loved that.
Yeah, can we shout out Jägermeister USA?
We just did. Handle. Leslie just said, I hate Jägermeister. You want to get that quote for the social media this week? Hey, I hate Jägermeister, Leslie Fram.
That's Leslie
Fram. I didn't say
Fram.
I hated it. I said it was gross. So.
Well, you know what happened? I think I told you the story, but about 25 years ago, I got really sick off it. And then, you know when you get sick off a certain drink, you don't want to drink it ever again? And then I didn't touch it for like 10 years. And then I told you my wife lived in Germany for 11 years. So she brought some back. And I'm like, I haven't had this in a while. I'll give it a second chance. And I've been like doing it every day since like 2016.
They need to be paying you. You need to be on the Jägermeister payroll.
I need to call a special number, I think. I might have to call another number.
Yeah.
To get some help.
I had a fun week. Remember that Avail check you kept joking about? They booked me, so I booked that show. I can tell you what show it is now, but I can't tell you what I'm playing. It's called Saints and Sinners.
I like the name.
I've heard of that. Wait a second. What is Saints and Sinners?
It's on Bounce.
Okay.
The Bounce Network.
What do you play?
I can't tell you.
Are you a saint or a sinner?
They contract all of this. You can't divulge story ahead of time.
Barnes, I'm sorry. I don't see you in the saint category.
No, I don't either.
No. I would be on probably the sinner's side.
That's what I see.
Anyway, we're filming in September. We start filming on the 10th.
What about you, Leslie? What did you do all week?
Okay, I have not had my hair cut since February because of coronavirus. I got 2 inches cut off. I don't know if
I saw
tell.
You posting with your mask on.
Oh, I did see that. Yes, you did. Yeah, yeah.
My hairdresser, Jimmy Wilmer, plug bell. Anyway, yeah, got that done.
Fran, you can never tell if your hair is shorter because you wear black shirts every day. So you have black hair and black shirts. I can't really get the contrast.
Kind of blends together.
Did they do a blowout? You know, we talked about blowouts, and my wife didn't get a blowout because they won't do blowouts here in Jersey because of the spreading the corona. Did they do a blowout
there?
Yeah,
we did, but we were socially distanced, and we were wearing our masks. And we were the only two people in the building, so it was safe.
Good.
This week, I had to renew my concealed weapon license every 5 years.
Was that annoying?
To do it. Can you have that in New Jersey, Cubby?
I haven't read into it, I didn't assume.
I didn't know. You know, some states, I guess, are different. But you want to talk about a freaking freak show? I had to go down. Usually, it's no big deal. You walk in, and it's like a marriage license. You just walk in, you fill out the paperwork, and you're done. There were hundreds of people. So I go bopping in like at 9:30 thinking, oh, it's just be a few minutes. You know, you have your paperwork. It was a renewal, so it wasn't going to be the whole shebang. You have to fill out the application again, but no fingerprints this time. Oh my God, there were hundreds of people. The line was all day. And so I just let the sheriff guy was like, look, come back tomorrow at 7, check in. So I had to go check in at 7, get on this list, and then at 8:30 they open the doors, and it's like a ballroom full of people every day.
Oh my God.
Getting their permits.
So
that's how out of control it is in Atlanta.
Were people bringing lawn chairs and stuff?
Yeah.
No, it was like a ballroom literally inside the government building. People with masks. You have to have masks to take your temperature when you walk in. And they have one person processing the licenses.
How long did it take you? How long were you
there?
I
was number 7 in line, and it took me an hour and a half. Then you have to go downtown to bring your paperwork, your affidavit, to get your background check.
Dude, that I would have shot myself after all that.
Right? You don't even need a permit. So that,
It's like DMV times 100, right?
That was my fun week. Shall we jump into celebrity sleaze? Butch Walker, still coming up, just a few.
I'm sure you've been following this, but the saga of the Ellen DeGeneres show. Oh. Now a couple of actors are coming out. Brad Garrett, Leah Thompson. Brad Garrett said, I think on Twitter, sorry, but it comes from the top, the Ellen show. No more than one who were treated horribly by her, common knowledge. I guess Thursday she finally spoke up. She said, hey, everybody, it's Ellen. On day one of our show, I told everyone in our first meeting that the Ellen DeGeneres show would be a place of happiness. No one would ever raise their voice and everyone would be treated with respect. And then she went on to say, I'm sorry for that. Anyone who knows me knows it's the opposite of what I believe and what I hoped for our show. She almost acted like she was surprised, but, you know, they're saying a lot of ex-producers engaged in rampant sexual misconduct and harassment. But a lot of people are coming out saying, you know, you weren't allowed to look her in the eye, you weren't allowed to talk with her, that she wasn't a very nice person. And now the show is under investigation.
Who was that that tweeted all that?
Brad Garrett.
Hey, Cubby.
Yeah.
I was at the Royal Hawaiian filming in Hawaii. Okay.
All right.
Guess who was sitting next to me at the bar?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Brad Garrett.
Brad Garrett. You always have to get one in, don't you?
You have to get one.
He's tall. He's like 6'6". Oh, guy's huge. But I spoke to someone yesterday in Hollywood, a very reliable source, who says it is 1,000,000,000% true.
I believe it. That she's a bitch? Pardon my mouth. Sorry.
They said, look, there's some people that worked on her show who are starting Facebook threads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, tough. Yes, you did do that. I mean, she's the antithesis of what she markets herself to be.
The happy show where everyone's dancing and happy. It's really sad to hear.
She ends the show every day. Be kind to one another.
It's a big scam.
Scam.
So what's going to happen?
I'm assuming more stories will come out. I don't know. The show's under investigation.
Does that mean?
Maybe
internal
they'll cancel.
Investigation, I think.
Yeah, maybe they'll cancel the show. I don't know.
Wow.
A lot of repercussions.
She'll walk away a one rich woman anyway. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, she's already set for life.
Yeah.
But who knew that she was that miserable?
Right.
Now, Barnes, I know that you watched the Jeffrey Epstein saga, right, on Netflix.
I did.
Well, you know, one of the women who was exposed, Virginia Giuffre, she is now she's been talking with attorneys. She's now naming names. I don't know if you've seen any of this, but she was deposed the other day, and she's talking about how Ghislaine Maxwell used her as a sex slave. And she's mentioning that the attorney conducting the interview said that she mentioned several names, including Prince Andrew, who's, you know, obviously was in the documentary, former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. And this is suspicious. An individual described as, quote unquote, another prince and another individual described as the large hotel chain owner. Not sure who that is, but she did say that she was surprised seeing Bill Clinton there. One time she remembers asking Jeffrey Epstein about why Bill Clinton was there, and he kind of laughed it off and said, yeah, he owes me a favor.
Wow.
He keeps trying to run from that story, and everybody that was within feet of that island said, yeah, he was here.
Numerous times. He was on the flight log numerous times.
Like, this story is just going to keep getting worse. We haven't reached the end of this at all.
No, not at all.
No.
Hey, another big surprise. Beyonce. Oh, yeah. She just released her visual album, Black is King, inspired by The Lion King, on Disney Plus. Disney Plus getting some great stuff lately. But already millions of views, as you can imagine, for Beyonce.
Wasn't that a surprise again?
It was another surprise, yeah.
She's the queen of that. She started the whole surprise thing, didn't she?
She really did.
Yeah, now more and more people do it. Why do you think that is, though? Does it stimulate more sales if you do it that way now?
People talk? People are like, oh my gosh, social media. Put something, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, the Taylor Swift album, I mean, it's... The numbers are out of control, and I can see why. I have been listening to that over and over again. I don't know if you saw the Emmy nominations, but Netflix on fire. Are you ready for this? 160 Emmy nominations just for Netflix and all their shows.
Just unbelievable how
they're killing it.
Yeah.
But by the way, I might want to mention that Tiger King was nominated for 6 Emmys, including outstanding documentary.
And that's why I think it's just an outstanding documentary, really. I mean,
yeah, it is. It's a murder story.
Right. It was well done.
Yeah, I've never watched Watchmen, but they got 26 nominations. The Marvelous Ms. Maisel got 20, Ozark 18, Succession 18. So, and then Eddie Murphy got his first Emmy nod in 21 years because he hosted Saturday Night Live. So I thought that was kind of cool.
You talked about the Taylor Swift record. Did you see she's already come back with a new version of, what was the song, Cardigan?
Yeah, right. She has. I've seen all the videos. I've been listening to everything.
It's been like 2 minutes and now she's already got this out.
But I knew you, dancing in your Levi's, drunk under a streetlight.
What do they call this? The campfire mix?
Yeah, I think I told you on the phone, Barnes, that I love the Bon Iver Exile song.
I thought it was Bon Iver.
Bon Iver.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
His real name
is Justin Vernon. I'm a big fan of his.
Oh,
so, wait a second.
I like him.
You guys realize that she revealed the name of Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively's child in her song, Betty?
This is funny. Yeah. I like Taylor Swift. I wish we could get her on here.
You know, she's friends with Blake and
Butch Walker. Let's get
there.
Come on. I think she's got an amazing voice, and she's an astute businesswoman.
It's a great songwriter, too. Yeah, she put that song Betty out, and her the Swifties, you know, they listened to every single lyric. They realized that she had revealed the name of Blake and Ryan Reynolds' baby.
I love this. It's like a little story.
Yeah.
You know, Taylor is the queen of people, like, probing and reading into things, and She loves to just put out, like, secrets in her songs. You have to figure things out. She's like, you need a decoder ring for all her music.
Listen to her little clues. So this is in the song Betty, and here's the first one. So Inez and James they're twins, right?
Yes.
So here's the mention of Inez.
You heard the rumors from Inez. You can't believe a word she says most times, but this time it was true.
So then here's James.
She said, James, get in, let's drive. Boys, days turned into nights, slept next to her, but...
And then, of course,
Betty, I won't make assumptions about why you switched your homeroom, but I think it's because of me.
So how are we supposed to deduce that this song, Betty, we're supposed to know that Inez and James were the kids' names?
No,
and
the Swifties knew
the
that.
I'm asking, like, how was that decoded? Who said, oh, Betty, wait a minute. I hear James and Inez in there.
Because every time, you know, Taylor drops a record, that's what her fans do. It's pretty incredible.
They get to work, really, is what they do.
They get to work, yeah.
Yep. I love her voice.
The VMAs were announced as well, and Ariana Grande and Lady Gaga led the nominations. Barnes, I know you're way into this about this reboot for The Sopranos. Have you heard about this?
Oh,
David
have
Chase
I heard about it?
Is returning to Jersey with The Many Saints of Newark, featuring a prequel to The Sopranos.
Oh, so it'll be a prequel?
Yeah, because I guess Tony Soprano is going to be played by, which is kind of eerie but cool, James Gandolfini's son Michael Gandolfini.
I heard from somebody on production just recently that worked on that show in the early days, and they were telling me that all those dudes, what do you call them in Jersey? Like the hangers-on?
Well, I mean, it's considered offensive. Guidos?
Well, I don't know. Whatever. All the guys that were around Tony, these were all these, like, mafia friends that they were approached and said, find them jobs. And even the producers were like, they're not actors. And they're like, find them a job. So a lot of those guys were like given those roles on The Sopranos.
And that's why it was so real.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think happened at the end? I know this. Don't Stop Believin's playing. They're at the diner.
So much controversy about the ending. I thought it was brilliant.
I thought it was brilliant too. I mean, I know this is like 13, 14 years old, but I still love to hear people's take on what they think happened.
Do you think that they all got killed or that they just lived on?
I think somebody took out Tony. That's what I think.
You do?
Yeah. Barnes?
I'm with you on that. How many years has it been? That finale was 10 years?
It was
07.
No, it was like 13 years. I want to say 07 or 08.
Yeah. Yeah, long time ago. My memory goes back about a week.
So this is a movie reboot. Who knows if it's going to be a TV show? You know, they keep asking.
Oh, a movie. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they keep asking David Chase, and he's like, I never say never, but who knows?
Wow.
And speaking of reboot, I guess Ratchet, a prequel to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, is going to happen, starring Sarah Paulson as Nurse Ratchet, premiering September 18th on Netflix.
Do you have all the streaming services? I know we've talked about this before. How many do you have? Leslie, you have Netflix, you have Disney Plus and all that?
I have that. I have Disney Plus. I have HBO Max, Showtime.
Right.
Prime, which I never really look at anymore. Amazon Prime.
Yeah, but it comes with your, you know,
comes with your
membership.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about cutting the cord, and Barnes told me YouTube TV was great. So
I love
thinking about that.
Still love it. They just raised their price $10, but still, it's worth it.
Right.
And, you know, there's so much more, but I think we should talk about Drew Barrymore. This is really cute. She's getting her own talk show, but this is how she promoted her talk show. It was Drew interviewing her 7-year-old self when her 7-year-old Drew Barrymore was interviewed by Johnny Carson. So cute.
Was it on The Tonight Show?
Yeah, Carson.
Yeah.
You know, her image was kind of shattered with me. I don't think you were with us. I think it was Jimmy and me. We went to a party in Canada. We were up there for the film fest. Remember that?
I was up
Quentin
there
Tarantino,
with you.
And we went to this private party, and Drew Barrymore was there. And she was anything but her persona.
What do you mean? Now, like, she didn't seem friendly?
No. Maybe she had a bad night.
Right.
Who knows? I mean, at this point, this was probably 20 years ago, so she was, what, in her 30s? I wanted to write it off as maybe it was a bad night. Nothing that happened to me. This is from an observer from a very small party where she was... Either she was agitated about something. I think that might have been during her Tom Green days. So
ooh,
maybe
I forgot about the Tom Green era.
Yeah, I did too. Wow.
Yeah. But here's this clip. It's just 30 seconds. And you said it was The Tonight Show?
Yes, it was The Tonight Show in 1982.
So this is Drew now sitting in Johnny's desk, and they did a split screen, and it's seamless. Kind of like that Nike ad that's out right now. You can't tell that it's not for real. And it's Drew interviewing herself.
Please welcome Drew Barrymore.
I've been waiting all my life to meet you.
It's been a wild ride. Can you believe I have two daughters around your age?
Kind of scary.
I have so much to fill you in on. Want to hear about our new daytime show?
I'd love to.
We're going to spend an hour every day celebrating life.
Oh.
I'm so excited. I could scream. Want to do it with me?
Guys, ready?
Love that.
Do you know I watch the old Johnny Carsons all the time? It's on every night, 10 o'clock on Antenna TV, 10 o'clock Eastern.
Talk about comedic timing. He was brilliant.
He's my favorite. Johnny Carson, what a legend.
That's your sleaze for this week, although we could go on for like another hour.
A couple new music items I wanted to hit you with. I don't know if you heard any of these. Billie Eilish came out with something brand new.
Yes, I like her.
My future.
With my future, can't wait to meet her. And
that kid is so smart.
Can I tell you, I met her last year.
Really?
She did a private show at Third Man Records, which is, you know, Jack White in the little blue room. couple of hundred people. Met her after. She was smiling, just really lovely. Because, you know, you think she's going to be very dark and moody. No, she was so sweet. And I was captivated by the show, completely captivated.
She seems very sweet. Her interview with, I forget if it was Fallon or someone, they went to her house and they're just in her bedroom. Hanging out, she makes all of her songs.
Right.
They make everything right there in the bedroom. Yeah. Bedroom pop, but she's not pop, but I think she's brilliant. And Dan and Shay, you familiar with those guys?
Yeah.
They kind of did kind of a country crossover. This is their new one called I Should Probably Go to Bed.
I should probably go to bed. I should probably turn off my phone. I should quit while I'm ahead. I should probably leave you alone.
Great voice.
Yeah, Shay has an incredible voice. You know, they had that big hit. Cubby, I'm sure you played it with Justin Bieber.
Yeah, we played it. Yep.
10,000 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
Such nice guys.
But just something I want to say here, a little observation. Every tune we've played from every artist is so, like, I'm not trying to poo-poo on it, but it's all just chill. You notice every song is like...
I think it's the state of people's minds right
everything's
now.
Everything's just like... Nah, 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 nah. You didn't play one thing with a beat.
No. Well, that's just this week.
Well, it's true. It's 1 week. But yeah, everything's very chill, man.
Hey, can we budget some drums, please? Ooh. Cubby's pissed.
Yeah, give me some all beats, right, man.
That song, though, is just in my head.
I was reading this in a on a website called SWNS Digital, and they say Americans are using music to stay connected during quarantine. Now... kind of sucks for us. We do a podcast and we talk for like an hour. So I don't know if this is good or bad, but 79% of Americans credit music with helping them stay connected while social distancing. Hip hop is the genre that lifted people's spirits the most, 50%, followed by rock at 46% and pop at 45%. And the top songs making people quarantine dance, and this is the two songs that have shown up in all the playlists that people are making. Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody and Michael Jackson's Billie Jean are your most commonly chosen songs on all these quarantine playlists. But yeah, credit music for helping people stay connected and happy. And I got to tell you, I don't know about you guys, if there's music on, you feel instantly better. Maybe, I don't know, because of us, we're in the music business, but if I'm in the kitchen and something's missing, hey, I won't say her name because it'll go off.
Yeah, blank. Everyone's room.
Yeah, but don't you guys think music is our...
Yes.
Is the soul, you know?
I've been streaming a lot more music, and I think maybe because I'm at home, even though I'm working from home, I have more time, and I am streaming a lot of music and a lot of different music, too.
It just puts your mood in a different place. When I sit down at the computer to work, unless I'm editing where there's sound I need to hear, I put music on.
And what about cleaning? You know, if I put music on, I will clean. I'll do a good hour cleaning.
Podcasts, though, are taking over in that. They're talking about 70% of people who are doing chores or listening to podcasts.
Which I hope, yeah, it's good for us. Because I will admit, when I saw this, I was like, oh, wow. 79% of people say music is what is keeping them connected during a quarantine. And I'm thinking, oh, God, what does that mean for podcasts? But podcast numbers are up.
All right, let's get Butch Walker on. Before he comes on, he's in the green room right now. Listen to that. Have you heard this remix? Not remix, but version of the song that he did?
You probably think that you were better now. You only say that because I'm not around. Not
he did this... 2 years ago.
So
that was pretty
good.
Fast.
Yeah.
I love this version.
That's so cool.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the multi-talented. This guy does it all every possible way. The guy is just the king. He is Butch Walker. What's going on, Butch?
Well, hello there.
How are you?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm just sitting in my dark, dirty basement, which I'm not lying. I wish I had video for you to see, but it's the most disgusting basement I've ever seen. But I had to have a place to set up my recording rig while I'm getting my studio built. So
that's hysterical. We were just playing Better Now. I just played the cover, which I love.
Oh, thanks.
And I love the video. Just seeing you play all the instruments and sing at the same time. You're bragging is what you're doing, Butch.
Totally. Not even humble. Not a bit, dude.
You covered that so early, though. You covered that before. It wasn't even a hit yet, was it?
It was brand new, I think. But every once in a while, there's a pop song that just really, like, I can't stop singing. And that was one of them. When I'd hear it, I'd be like, God, I hate that I love this song. Or I love that I hate it. I don't know what it is. I just loved it. But I think it's a great song. And it was really fun just to, like, sometimes I get little free bits of time in the studio, and I try to just occupy those with doing a random cover here and there. So really
and,
fun.
And you finished it off perfectly with the artwork on the single when you had the tattoos around your eyes and stuff. I thought that was just, it was the full package, paying homage to Post Malone.
Totally, man. Well, so good to hear all, see you guys and hear you. I can see you guys right now, but I know you can't see me. So
we've been talking a lot about you and obviously your career, which is just off the chart. And I have to say this about Butch Walker, the producer. I don't know of any other producer that has seamlessly worked every single genre. And also working from superstars to really, like, brand new, independent, cool artist. And who else can do that? I mean, from working from everyone from, you know, Green Day and the Wallflowers to, you know, I was just talking to Elizabeth Cook, who you just produced. And she's like, there's nobody else better.
Love Elizabeth. Oh, well.
Do you listen to just about everything? Like when you're deciding, you know, who you're going to work with? I mean, I'm sure that the music has to mean something to you. But what goes into that decision making for you when you want to work or produce someone?
I grew up listening to every kind of music. You know, when you're young and living in rural Georgia, whatever was on the radio, I listened to. And so my sisters had an eclectic bag of records. So, you know, I was listening to everything from, at the time, this would be like, you know, what was fashionable at the time was funk and disco and metal and punk and pop. And so nothing was off limits. And my mom, who listened to, you know, Al Green and CCR and stuff like that and loved Elvis. And I mean, there was just so much of it that I'd never had a filter for what I thought I was supposed to listen to and not listen to, which I loved. And I tried to just always keep that with me in my back pocket when I'm working with people in the studio or when I'm looking at something to produce. I just think there's good music in every genre. And so I'm attracted to whatever, you know, strikes me as good or appealing or interesting, you know. And a lot of times it's who it is. Like if I meet with the person, I really fall in love with their personality and think that they've got a lot to offer and they're talented. That's part of it. Cause you know, life is too short to be in the studio making records with assholes. So, so, you know, it's always good to just be making records with good, positive, fun people that work hard and want to make great art. And I just, you know, there's no rules to me. So
really nice to meet you.
You too.
I've heard great things about you from Leslie and Barnes. And here's my question. You know, you mentioned all these great artists you've worked with. Who have you not met that you are really digging? Like, you're digging their sound and you would love to work with?
That's a good question.
Like, we were just talking about Billie Eilish on our show here.
Oh, that would be one. I think
really?
She's fascinating. I think she's amazing. She's her own. She's an independent woman. She is badass. She does her own thing. Everything about her is exactly why she's huge right now. And
you'd have to pry Phineas out of the room before I think that would happen.
Yeah, I know, but that's what's so great about it. I know, it's a brother-sister thing, and that's what's great about it is, you know, they made all that in their bedroom despite anybody telling them how to do it or what to do, which I thought was amazing. And those are the records that come along and make me so excited when they break the mold. Like, you know, when Macklemore got big because nobody, he ended up not signing to anybody because he just made the record himself with Ryan Lewis and it was the biggest thing ever. And it was, you know, basically bucking the system, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I always tried to, I love the DIY thing myself. I mean, I came from, as Leslie will, you know, attest to, you know, I made a record in my living room in my underwear and and she started playing it. Next thing you know, I had a top five hit on the radio that was done in a bedroom with like two microphones. And I just, that started me on the path to where I am now. And I never forget that, by the way, that's what put me to where I am today. And you know, so when I see a kid like that, like Billy and even Phineas, you know, super talented, just sitting in a bedroom making completely experimental, amazing pop music. That is so rad, man. That is the coolest. So yes, that would be one of many, but it's kind of like going into Costco and walking out with nothing. You asked me a question, Cubby, that I can't even remember right off the top of my head now that you've asked me, but I'll wake up in the middle of the night with 17 answers. So
no, it's all good.
But you're such a prolific songwriter. It seems like to me that you can't get up and walk to the refrigerator without coming up with a song. And then you record it, and then you have time to do everybody else's records. But you're the king of these kind of anthem hooks. And I mean, one of my favorites off the new album is your grand hit called Fuck It.
Nice.
So, like, to me, you got up one day and you're like, yeah, fuck it. Oh, you know what? Turn on the gear. Let's go.
Right.
It was funny.
I love it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it. That was one of the last songs I did for the record, because it was like I had the whole song and didn't have the chorus. And I think the chorus, I was saying something weird, like, you know, love is a something, drug, whatever. It was like, it sounded way too like 80s Aerosmith. But I was like... And then I finally said, "Oh, it totally works in that phrasing to say fuck it," and it fit with what I was talking about in the album too, which we can obviously get into or not. But that was like, but you know, I love that. That was my homage to early Toto, I think, in that song. You know, I wanted,
and clearly no intentions to get that as a single.
No, sir.
Beep, beep.
Right, beep.
It would be funny if every time you did it, it beeped. You know. But yeah, that's, you know, I love big hooks. Those are fun.
And speaking of, you know, honestly, American love story and the theme of this, you have been writing this record over the last few years, but now, you know, during pandemic and social injustice and everything else, I mean, you went there, which is great. And you talk about growing up in the South in a lot of interviews. I grew up in Alabama, but you know, we have this, you know, systematic racism everywhere, but This is an album unlike a lot of your records. What has been the most inspirational thing for you putting this out there?
Well, okay, that's a good question, because I did the record over 2 years ago and I just sat on it. And I think that a lot of that was because I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know if it would be a record that I could go do a conventional tour on, because I didn't think it would be fair to just go out there and pepper in one or two songs from the record into my set of 30 years of music, and it'd be taken out of context, because a lot of the lyrics on the record are sung from the firsthand perspective of very questionable protagonists, you know. So there's some really dodgy shit being said lyrically, and that's because if you take it out of context, people would be like, what the hell did he just say? You know, I didn't want to like cause that. So I felt like it was something that was its own thing. So we kind of said, well, we dub it a rock opera, obviously, is something you listen to from beginning to end. It tells a story. That being said, it needs to be its own show. It needed to be its own concert or whatever, where it plays front to back. But then you've got that whole thing of like, well, do I go out on a normal tour and then play a whole entire record that's new that nobody's familiar with front to back? That's not, nobody wants that. Or maybe they do, but I'm always trying to at least think of the fans in mind when I go tour, because I'm blessed to still have an incredible, you know, I like to think rabid fan base.
You do.
When they come to the shows, you know, we're all one, and we get into the show together. So I didn't want to disconnect from them for 45 minutes straight in one setting. So I sat on it and I didn't do anything with it for 2 years. And then, you know, pandemonium 2020 happened, and we were locked down and no one was putting out records. No one was touring. And I think they weren't. And that was synonymous with each other, because, you know, they need to tour to put a record out and vice versa. And then, you know, it just felt like over the course of 3 years, the subject matter had not dated itself. It was still, it was worse than ever. When it had somewhat been dormant and, you know, not being talked about or addressed as much in the media or on the streets, but more behind closed doors over the last, you know, however many years. And so it just kind of came to a head over the last few years.
You're taking these, they're all first person. If you haven't listened to the record, do it. Listen to the whole thing. And he's taking on these different characters as he sings about these issues. Were you fearing alienation politics-wise, and not to, I don't want to get political at all.
That's fine.
When you put something out like that, do you fear that, you know, your fans are your fans?
Yes.
And what if some of them, you know, have drastic opinions on that type of thing? Wasn't that a risk?
Yeah, and they did, and they do. And you know, I realize I don't live in a bubble, you know, for that, for what it's worth. You know, I grew up in the South. I grew up in this. A lot of these stories are true.
Sure.
And it's fictional characters based on real shit. And so, you know, and living all over the country and going back and forth to the South, to the West Coast all the time. And, you know, touring a lot, there was just, I've gotten to see, I want to say, you know, I've gotten to see a lot in the last, you know, 30 years of doing this. And I had a lot to say about it, but of course I knew there would be some blowback because sadly everything is politicized now. Everything.
Yeah, everything.
And you know, you're not going to just do this record and think that people aren't going to get offended by it. I mean, they got offended when, you know, in the 70s when Randy Newman put out Good Old Boys, mm-hmm. which he was, you know, singing about, you know, Leslie's home state and my mom's home state, by the way. And so, but he was singing from first person perspective as well. And it was very like, what the hell, man, you know? But I kind of just looked at it as, you know, if I don't say it, if I don't say something about it, then what's the point of it? It's not art, you know? I mean, that's some of my favorite music was spawned during times of, you know, protest and strife and whatever. And then there's just there's so much amazing, important music out there. Not that I'm trying to say mine is, but I'm just saying it inspired me to make the record. And so why would I not put it out there if just because of what a couple of trolls online are going to say? And that's fine, because yeah. I've said it a million times that if somebody's got a problem with me calling out bigotry and racism, then they're not my people and I want to show them the door anyway.
Amen.
And that's fine. And I don't give a shit if I lose. If I lost, another thing that Jason Isbell said, a great thing is like, if I lose half my fans, at least I get to keep all of my soul. And it's a beautiful thing. Only someone that prolific with words can say that. And I use it quite often because it's true. And luckily, you know, I'd say the reaction though, amazingly has been super positive. And for the most part, it's been very positive. And you know, if you want to base it on like Instagram followers, you know, it didn't go down, they went up. And so I'll take that as this must not have offended, you know, a lot of them, you know, maybe.
Why did you get off of Twitter?
Well, that was just a breeding ground for just trouble and for trolling and for hatred. And that's the same reason I haven't been on, I'm not on my Facebook account. That's like all my socials are pretty much handled by management. But like, you know, when I'm in charge of doing the wording and doing the posting and copying to other social platforms and stuff, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up and get emotional about all these heavy topics right now. And you're just going to end up. And what was sad is like seeing that, you know, how many people that have, you know, I've been following you for years and I can't believe you would like, you know, say this and say that. And it's like, how have you not known me that well after all this time? Have you not listened
to... No surprise, people.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden everyone's completely shocked and appalled that an artist has a different opinion as them. And it's like, that's just the way it's going to be. But with Twitter, I just got sick of it. And I was like, I have like 650,000 followers and I'm done. I hit delete and I was out. And, you know, also I just wanted to stop letting it consume me because that shit's a drug and it consumes everybody. I see it. I see it all the day long, you know. Everybody's buried in their phones posting selfies and pictures of themselves and talking about their and talking about other things a lot. And I have to do it to promote just like anybody else does on like, say, Instagram or whatever. But man, I got to say, at the end of the day, you wake up sometimes and you go, God, this is so stupid. You know,
like, it's funny that you say that because, you know, you were mentioning Jason Isbell and, you know, and I follow like Tom Morello and people like that. And when fans get on there and go, shut up and sing, I'm like, what are you talking
Jesus
about?
Christ.
That is ridiculous. So I totally get why you're off of it. I know that I have friends that are like totally off Facebook because of the negativity.
Yeah.
People are looser on Twitter. They just say crap and they just feel like,
you know, YouTube is bad too. You've ever heard the comments on YouTube?
Well, yeah. YouTube to me is like, that's where, that was the, they were the original you know, offender for sure of trolls. Because
YouTube is a great outlet. Don't get me wrong, but don't read the comments. Like the first comment will be like, "This song is great," and then 400 people after that will be like, "No, it isn't because this."
Right. Oh, yeah, people just love to hate.
Yeah,
I mean, not everybody, but this group of vile troll people, they just love to hate, and they're going to hate no matter what it is.
And you know, we grew up in a generation where for the first half of our life the internet didn't exist and people didn't have a voice. Now everybody has a voice and everybody can say whatever the hell they want behind a keyboard with anonymity, and that means no repercussions. And and so, you know, coming up making music, people were in any kind of art, acting, movies, whatever, people were more reckless with their, like, there was no governor on it, so to speak, because you weren't worried about what people were going to say, because really there was no outlet for people to give you their opinion. You just had you had music critics and you had film critics. And that was only like 10 people, you know, and they didn't really speak for the common listener and the common, you know, movie watcher or whatever. So now everyone's a critic. And I think they love that. It's a drug to them that they can actually be heard. And that's the other thing, too, is like on Twitter, it was easy for me to engage. It was easy for me to bite back. And as you know, I'm kind of a redneck, so I bark very hard back. If somebody barks at me, I bark harder. And that's just not productive because that's what they love. They love that they actually, I'm like, these are people that have been ignored their whole life. And all of a sudden, they can say something that will trigger you. And then all of a sudden, you're engaging and it's a rush for them. They get like butterflies in their stomach probably when they're reading it and go like, "Oh my God, I actually got to this person. That's amazing. I matter," you know? So I just said, "Fuck all y'all."
And wrote a song.
Yeah.
I saw that interview you did with our friend Matt Penfield about your all-time favorite albums. We have some of the similar favorite albums like Elvis Costello, My Aim Is True, and Springsteen, Born to Run, Tom Petty. I have been dying to ask you, though, because I know how much you love Queen. What did you think of Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie?
You know what? I was pleasantly surprised because I'm always fearful of seeing music biopics because you go, even just watching the ones that were made for TV, which were always horrendous growing up, and you would, and as a producer and a person who knows my way around the studio and gear, it would drive me crazy to see them in the studio singing into the wrong end of the damn microphone or something in a scene. And I'd be like, no, the continuity's terrible. This is all wrong. That would never happen, you know, but you got to realize that, you know, a lot of people just, you know, a music lover is just going to watch it and not look for that stuff. So sadly that ruined me a little bit, but I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was, and I took my son who loves Queen as well. And by the way, I had nothing to do with that. He discovered it on his own. He's 13.
That's awesome.
And he loves musicals. He loves theater. He's a total like theater actor. He's really good. And so he loves the songs that are obviously way more like cinematic. And so Queen, he loves. And so I took him to see it, and I was so pleasantly surprised with, obviously, Rami Malek was so incredible.
So
he was uncanny.
Okay.
And I mean, without that, what are you going to do? I couldn't even imagine it being Sacha Baron Cohen, who I love, but I could not have imagined him being Freddie Mercury, even though he does everything to me great. But Rami Malek was just incredible. I couldn't believe it. And it was so fun to see that it was all worth it just for the last 20 minutes of the Live Aid show.
Absolutely.
I mean, Jesus, they nailed every aspect of it when you watch it side by side. It's so incredible.
Butch, I want to ask you a question that not a lot of people can answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I think about. Just, it comes through my brain, and when this happened, I thought about it because knowing you, what is it like to lose almost everything that you have? And I'm talking about the California fires. I can't imagine, I just got chills just saying that.
Yes.
Like, I can't imagine what that must be like, and it's been years, I know, but still, what is that like?
Well, you know, you never think it's going to happen to you, and obviously it's not death, but it is some sort of a death. It's not as heavy weighted as a physical, you know, person passing, right. But it is a dying of memories and things that you'll never get back that were close to you and close and were, you know, family heirlooms and you know, vintage guitar collection for, and my my first guitar as a kid that my uncle gave me to learn on and all these little things that you know and not to mention like my girl's war, like her dad's, you know, war medals and and burial flag and things like that. I mean, heavy stuff. But after a couple of weeks of grieving pretty hard and then having to do all the math and of all the like accounting of everything gone and that you really, you know, you come out from it going, you know what, it's all just stuff and you can literally move on. You can move on. And there was a beauty in the load being so lightened that it was like, okay, well, where do we want to go? We can move and live anywhere. We can go anywhere. We could go live on a farm in Italy if we wanted to. We only have two suitcases to our name, you know?
Were you not home when the whole thing started? No. So you couldn't salvage anything?
No, the only thing it was New York. I was playing two shows. I was playing two acoustic shows and had my family with me. And my son was only 6 months old at the time. And so, you know, I came back with literally those two acoustic guitars and two suitcases. And that was all we had.
How did you find out it was happening?
My friend Ryan, who is from Atlanta, who lives in California now, and who actually helps me with my charity now, he's an incredible human. But he used to come to my old band Marvelous 3 shows and he would stand outside and wait for me to come out and after the shows and talk my head off. And he was just this really hyper funny kid. And I remember he hit me up one time on a side note here. He hit me up one time online and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about moving to LA to try my hand at being a comedian or an actor." And I said, "Well, you'll be regretting it if you don't. So you should just go. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work out. You should try. You're young." Ends up later, you know, I run into him at the grocery store out in Malibu one day. And I was like, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I came out here." He said, "But it turns out I got a scholarship to Pepperdine University."
Wow.
And so he rode motorcycles. So we started becoming motorcycle buddies and riding all over the place. And he's the one who, that morning, I had neighbors that were saying, they were hitting me up at 5 a.m. West Coast time, and I was in New York, and I was walking my son in Union Square, and I started getting phone calls and stuff saying, "Dude, are you home? You got to get out. You got to get out," because the hillside was on fire where my house was. And I said, "No, I'm in New York. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but obviously there's a lot of close calls out there and a lot of scares." And so I didn't kind of take it with a grain of salt after being out there for only a year that there had been a couple of close calls with the weather. And so I hit Ryan up and I said, "Hey, man, just in case, will you just go to the house and grab like some personals and stuff just in case and like maybe some guitars and some war medals and things like that?" So he dropped everything and went there. And then he called me. I remember he called me and he was like coughing and choking and out of breath. And I was sitting in Union Square at a coffee shop with my kid in a stroller. And he was like, "Man, I tried to get in there. There was a barricade on your street. The cops had blocked it off. I ran over the barricade in my truck." Jeez. "And went to the house and I was trying to get up there, but the smoke was too crazy and blah, blah, blah." And he goes, "Man, I'm just so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I was like, "What are you sorry about?" And he goes, "Man, your house is just gone. Oh. Everything's gone."
Oh,
gosh.
And, and I just kind of, I broke down right there at this coffee shop. And I was just like, "God, how am I going to go back to the hotel and tell everybody about this?" And that was the longest,
heavy
longest walk of my life back to the hotel room. And it was crazy, you know, it was just a big shock. But, anyway, that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship with my buddy Ryan, and who is to this day now has his White Heart organization that helps amputees, wounded veterans, and raises a bunch of money. And now he's working for my pancreatic cancer charity, which is in the honor of my late father, Big Butch. So it's good. We have a good relationship now.
Thank you for.
And I'm sorry that happened to you.
Thank you for kind of recanting that story, because I know it's painful. But
it's weird. It's been so long. I got to the point where, you know, I would just make jokes about it now, about like, oh yeah, I had that guitar, it burned, you know, and I would just kind of make jokes about it. But when I tell the story, I still get choked up, you know.
No, man, we're getting choked up hearing you tell the
heavy
story.
Yeah. It's a heavy load, you know. It's a heavy thing. But
thanks for sharing.
But it's okay. Yeah. But you know what? Like you say, it is just stuff, and it is
right.
And I realized how important, more than anything, of having people in your life and having friends was so much more important than having two of everything and having, you know, watches or guitars or motorcycles or anything like that. None of that stuff mattered if you have no friends and you have no people that love you and have no people that would come to your beck and call. And man, I was overwhelmed with people just coming and saying, dude, you need to borrow. I mean, I had Brendan O'Brien and Michael Beinhorn and Jack Joseph Puig and these huge producers all coming to me and going like, dude, I couldn't imagine if that happened to me. If you need any of my gear, if you need to borrow anything, it's yours. You can have it as long as you want. Had people showing up with clothes and stuff, and I was like, man, I'm okay financially at that point. You know, I was like, I actually don't need this stuff, but I can't believe people would reach out to do that. And so, you know, although I did take some of the clothes because I was wearing the same pants that I came home. I only took one pair of jeans with me to New York, and I wore those until I couldn't wear them anymore. So it was nice to have. It shows you how important family and friends are.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, Butch, on a much lighter note, let's talk about right now as we speak. I know you're in a dark basement. You're probably in your studio with your studio gear all around you. Are you currently producing something right now, or what are you doing?
Yeah,
right now?
It's been surprisingly very active this year. I've done a lot of records this year, and even during lockdown, I've been finishing up on a few records that were needing to get done that I worked on before everybody had to, you know, stay out of the studio. So I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to. We were lucky enough to get the new Green Day record out and before all the lockdown happened, and it went to number one, and I couldn't have been happier about that, because that was a labor of love working on that record with those guys. And then after that, I had a couple of other records here in the pipeline that I've done, which I guess I could go ahead and let the cat out of the bag on the ones I'm working on, because they're not going to be out for a minute now that there's, you know, now that we're in a pandemic, but they are coming out.
Scoop.
I was working on, so I just finished a record for Jewel, which is an amazing record. Nothing like she's ever done before.
Love Jewel.
Uh-huh. She's
former top fiver.
She is. She's incredible. Still should be.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
Yours. But, and then just did a new record for The Wallflowers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is incredible as well. I'm super proud of that one. Finishing up a Matt Nathanson record, which is very good. Love that guy and love this record. And
hold on, back up to Wallflowers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're such a unique sound that they have. What are you doing to them? Don't mess with that.
Nope.
Don't mess
with
that.
Nope, dude, you think Jacob would let me?
True.
He's one of the rare instances, and he and I have been friends for years, and you know what's funny? That dates back to our first time meeting each other, Leslie, was at the Christmas show that I came in last minute with Marvelous 3 to take the place of Vertical Horizon for the Christmas show when they canceled last minute.
And
it was us and the Wallflowers on the bill. Mm-hmm. And we played, and the Wallflowers, of course, they were scheduled to headline. So I remember Jacob, that was the first time that I met him, because when we got off stage, he came up to me and he goes, "You mean we have to go on now after that?"
That's how everybody feels.
And because we were whatever, we were so crazy and hyper and like put on a high energy show, and you know,
and he's so chill.
He's so chill, but you know what? He lets the songs do the talking, and I learned a lesson from that too. Of like, I need to try to aspire to write songs as good as this guy can write. And I'm telling you, he still writes them just as good. So
he's so good. I love them.
And we've all become close. All of our families have become super close. Vacationed together a lot throughout the years. That he finally asked me, and I never pushed it because I was like, one day that dude needs to ask me to make a damn record for him, and I'm never gonna. I don't like push it on people, you know.
You're like, hey, I produce, by the
way. Yeah, no, and he knows, but he always has said, he's like, you know, we could never work together professionally because you just would not want to be my friend anymore. And so he finally said, I want you to make a new Wallflowers record. I said, let's go.
Of course. Yeah, I love the Weezer record you did too.
Oh man, we had a fun time doing that too.
It's funny. I think I remember texting this to you several years ago, but we did a crossroads at CMT with Fall Out Boy and talking to those guys about you. And they were like, yeah, we were kind of punks and Butch set us straight. But they basically said, when you do a record with Butch Walker, you're suddenly cooler.
That's funny to me, but I mean, you know, that's I love hearing that, obviously, but it's certainly, I don't know if that's true. I think we just had such an interesting chemistry, you know, between me and Pat and Pete, and they had such an interesting, like, Elton John, Bernie Taupin thing going, where all the lyrics are written by the bass player who doesn't sing, a lick.
Right, right.
And all the songs are written and composed by the singer who doesn't write lyrics, and it's just, but man, what a combination, so... Super fun to work with, and I love those guys so much.
Can you please just mix our podcast so we can put on there "Mixed by Butch Walker"?
Sure.
I'm gonna send you the files.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, Rolling Stone's gonna say, "From Taylor Swift to the Pop Culture Show, Butch Walker."
You know, Butch. I was telling Barnes about last year at the Pilgrimage Festival, which one of my favorite festivals. Was the last time I got to see you live. But your live show is in the top five for me of all live shows. And, you know, we all go see a lot of...
So much energy.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, you're up there for me with, like, Soundgarden and Rage Against the Machine. But the energy level... But a lot of people go to concerts and it's like a social event. But when they go see Butch Walker, your fans are with you from beginning to end. And, you know, you look out into the crowd and it's people of all ages. What is happening in your mind when you are on stage? Because you go somewhere else.
I do. And thank you for the kind words. I mean, I just love playing and performing and getting out all of my aggressions and sadness and madness and everything that happens throughout the day, all the bullshit. You get 30 minutes to 2.5 hours, depending on what I'm doing, headlining or opening, to just get it all out. And it's therapy. And even if I'm playing to an audience that I don't know, you know, I love the challenge of, like, trying to just get them engaged. And I love when I play to, you know, to my group of people that come see me play my own shows. There's just man, why would I not want to connect with them? Why would we not want to make this fun for each other? And I grew up on those kind of artists. You know, I grew up on those performers, like, I mean, Springsteen and Petty and Freddie Mercury and all these artists that just were the best showmen and just were able to just capture everyone from the first note to the last and never let go. And that's performing, and that's a show to me, you know, not just going through the motions of playing the songs, you know?
Yeah, definitely like a Springsteen concert.
Yeah, your talent is, I mean, we're not just blowing smoke. I mean, so many years and so many gigs we've been to, it's unbelievable how much energy you have and how much of a connection. I mean, there were several women this week that I bumped into who've been in Atlanta for years, and they said, "Who's on your show this week?" I said, "Butch Walker." They stopped in their tracks. They were like, "You've got Butch on?"
Well, that's because Butch marries people at his shows.
I have.
That's true.
You jumped off stage one time and married a couple in a crowd. I heard
I'm
about
indoctrinated.
That.
Yes, I've actually gotten in several
Love
states.
That.
And whenever somebody hits me up and they say, "Hey, can you, would you, you know, we've been," and it's always about their story. You know, it's like if they've been like, "Oh, we've been fans of yours since we were 15 and we met at your show and now we're getting married. And would you officiate it?" And I'm like, "Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding me?
Internet Jesus."
Totally.
Love it.
Totally. And I actually said I would do an entire tour that way, you know.
That would be hysterical. Butch, thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us. It was fun. We're going to have to do a second part of this someday because there's so much.
We could talk to you for hours.
We could talk about.
I could talk to you guys for hours. You guys rule. Thank you so much. And what a great chance to catch up with all of you.
We're definitely going
to
do it again.
And see
you. Thank you, Butch.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for the Pop Culture Show. We'll see you next week.